Your life redefined, where we believe aging is inevitable, but getting old is not. I'm Heather Rusnak, your host, along with my trusty sidekick, Pat Richardson. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm doing great today. And we are in the studio in the beautiful, lovely town of Carrboro, North Carolina, with some guests. And we are going to be talking today about Alzheimer's and the research that goes on to try to eradicate this horrible disease. As many of you may know, September is Alzheimer's Month. We will be, there are walks and runs and fundraisers going on all across our state. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time focusing on this disease with our guests. And today we have Henry Edmonds, who is the program coordinator for the Joseph and Kathleen Bryan Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Welcome, Mr.
I know that's a mouthful, but
It is. And tell us a little bit about the center.
Okay. The Joseph and Kathleen Bryan Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, which could be shortened in terms of just saying Bryan ADRC.
Okay. That sounds easier.
it's a lot easier to say.
Yeah.
We've been in, I guess, one of the major centers for Alzheimer's disease research for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And we're located, of course, at Duke University Medical Center. We do treatment. We have also a arm of the program that deals with caregivers. We print a caregiver newsletter that goes out to persons all across the state of North Carolina, and it's free. And we have several support groups for various different types of caregivers. But our major emphasis, of course, is research.
All right. And I see that you're, you are a retired pastor, educator, and you've gone all over this beautiful state and the world doing your things. What got you interested in the Alzheimer's cause or mission?
Well, my father-in-law had Alzheimer's disease, and we knew nothing about it at the time. This was about 20 years ago. And we got involved with the Alzheimer's Association, learned a lot about the disease itself, and started coming to the support groups, and also got involved with Duke University Medical Center, the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center here at Duke. And we learned a lot about it. I was actually a volunteer with the center for several years, and as a what we call a statewide visitor with the center. And being a statewide visitor, it gave me an opportunity to learn even more about the disease and how it affected particularly African Americans with the disease. And so eventually I came on as a part-time, because I was pastoring at the time, a part-time pastor and part-time statewide visitor with the center. And that's how I got involved with it.
Okay. Well, and what have you, when you were the statewide visitor and you would go out to the state and, throughout the state, did you see a difference with African Americans versus other populations? Did it affect them differently or more, or what did you see?
Yes, particularly at that time, the disease wasn't very widely known in the African American community. Most people thought that it was just normal aging, or they would call it senility or something else other than Alzheimer's disease. And so our major role at that time was educating the community about Alzheimer's disease, and so that people could get diagnosed, because people were just keeping their loved ones at home and not getting them diagnosed with the disease.
And so what have you, what kind of, what is the center or you, what have y'all done in order to increase that awareness in that population?
Well, we have a group of statewide visitors all across the state of North Carolina. And these community persons or statewide visitors have their own group of persons that they are associated with, the organizations that they're associated with. We bring them into Duke, we educate them about the disease, then they disseminate that information to the communities that they serve. So that's our biggest role as statewide visitors, disseminating information and developing health fairs and those kinds of things in their communities.
And these statewide visitors, they're all volunteers?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
They're all volunteers.
And so what kind of research is the center doing currently that affects the population of African Americans, or I guess all folks that have, it doesn't matter. You have Alzheimer's, you have Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Actually, right now we have one of the first research projects that we've done at Duke that is predominantly for African Americans. It's called the African American Study of Memory and Aging.
Okay.
And this study involves learning more about the genetics of the disease in African Americans and how that differs from the general population. We're looking at genetics of African Americans and then Africans and a majority population here in America.
And so what are the, I mean, without getting too technical as far as into genetics, but I mean, in layman's terms, can you tell us what you're seeing, what the differences are?
Well, the study's just started, so we haven't seen any results as of yet, but just basically we can say that there are some genetic differences between Africans and African Americans. What we understand right now is that the APOE4 gene, which has been associated with Alzheimer's disease for years, that gene may act differently in African Americans than the general population.
Interesting. And so we also have with us, I don't want to leave her out, another guest of ours, and this is
Dr. Cassandra German. Or Germaine.
Germaine.
Welcome, Dr. Germaine.
Dr. Germaine, she's a medical instructor at Duke University Medical Center in the Department of Psychiatry. Big word for this group in here. Psychiatry, I already feel like I'm being watched. Already. And behavioral sciences. Received your BA from Hunter College and your MS and PhD from North Carolina State University. Won't hold that against you since we're here in Chapel Hill with UNC. But you've been doing a lot of research. So talk to Heather and us about our audience about the research. But Heather, before we go on,
yes,
I wanted to share with you, we have a wonderful opportunity to raffle, I guess that's the word, off two tickets. You're like, tickets, really?
Where are we going? Mm-hmm.
So there's a play that's coming up that's being sponsored and hosted by Us Against Alzheimer's, which is based in Washington, D.C., and our very own Governor Pat McCrory, we know he's listening because we've been talking about him for about a month now.
Yeah, hopefully. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to be in this play, and this is a kind of a, I guess, like a, not an open mic, but it's a reading of this play called Surviving Grace. And it's going to be held here in Durham. And we have two wonderful tickets for this play, Lonnie Anderson and Deborah Morgan, who is on WRAL, and a cast of other stars are doing this reading.
Yeah.
And so to my understanding, Governor McCrory has a personal history with Alzheimer's, and I'm sure he'll share that in the reading. So we have two wonderful tickets for that. That's September 5th. So if you're out there, you need to call. Our call-in number is 919-246-9639. Again, that's 919-246-9639 to win two complimentary tickets to this reading.
That sounds like a fabulous prize.
It is.
Okay, all you folks out there, just get busy dialing. All right, so Dr. Germaine, so I can't talk today. Psychiatry and behavioral health, how does that play into Alzheimer's disease?
Okay, yes, I'm in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science, and in fact, I'm a psychologist by training, not a psychiatrist.
We had the softest speaking people in the show today.
She's doing fine.
I apologize. I'm recovering from laryngitis, so you'll have to bear with me. So oftentimes people might ask, what does behavioral science have to do with Alzheimer's disease? And as many people who are battling disease are aware, We currently don't have any effective drugs to treat dementia and Alzheimer's disease once it's onset and it's progressing. So the shift of research right now is really focusing on prevention.
Mm-hmm.
We are fortunate enough to know from previous research that there are quite a few significant risk factors in addition to genetics, that such as lifestyle factors, that do impact and increase one's risk for Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. And even though we spend quite a bit of time talking about Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular dementia is the second most prevalent type, and often people don't recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, some of the most common risk factors for vascular and Alzheimer's disease are treatable illnesses and preventable illnesses such as hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, which is elevated blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So these are very common and chronic diseases that people in our that people are experiencing every day. And we do know that if, lifestyle factors such as diet and exercise in particular are things that are successful in preventing those illnesses. And our the research that I'm involved in right now is really focusing on that. Many people who are diagnosed with dementia, Alzheimer's in particular, also have a very have a cardiovascular component. For the majority, when people are diagnosed, they're usually diagnosed with probable dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And not until after death do they confirm it via autopsy. And what they found in the brain is that for people who have those plaques and tangles that are characteristic of Alzheimer's disease, there's also a very large portion, 50% or more, that also have a cardiovascular component, which means your heart health is really impacting your brain health. And these are things that we can do something about.
Wow, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard that before. I mean, I know about vascular dementia, and we see that a lot, you know, and where we work.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that that's preventable with lowering your cholesterol, your blood pressure, your sugar levels, that kind of thing, that's really important. That's news that everyone needs to know.
Absolutely.
Because, forgive me, I'm not a medical person, but is hypertension more of a problem in the African-American community than others?
Yes, absolutely. Hypertension, which is having high blood pressure, is in particular predominant in the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the Latino community. And we find that that is a very strong risk factor. And again, it's something that is often treatable and modifiable through exercise and diet in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The randomized clinical trial that I'm involved in is called the Enlighten Study.
Mm-hmm.
And we are currently, and it isn't limited to African Americans, it's for everyone. We are currently conducting a randomized clinical trial where we are specifically prescribing and using diet and exercise and modifying that through supervised intervention to help individuals who already have risk factors for heart disease. So if you have hypertension, if you have high cholesterol, if you have diabetes or family history, and you are sedentary, which means you're not exercising at least the recommended 120 minutes per day, I mean per week at minimum, then again, you are at increased risk of having some kind of cognitive impairment and starting to have memory problems. So what our goal is in our study is to help individuals who we know already are at increased risk, who have cardiovascular risk factors and are not exercising. And the way that we're doing that is by having a 6-month clinical trial. Individuals are randomized to one of four treatment conditions, either a DASH diet, exercise only, or when we're talking about aerobic cardiovascular exercise,
okay,
a combination of the two, or an intensive health education. And what we're hoping is that at the end of the 6 months that they will see improvements both in their cardiovascular health as well as their cognitive health. And we don't have preliminary results as yet because we are still randomizing. But so far, we've heard very positive results from individuals who are participating. Some of the people who come into our study are already starting to experience some mild problems with concentration or remembering items, things such as names. And, you know, some of them have just said, you know, just anecdotally, that they feel a difference not only physically but cognitively as well. So their thinking may be clear. They're just noticing and sharing with us. Again, you know, our results are not in yet, and we're still looking for 80 more participants. But it is very exciting for us to hear positive feedback so far from those who have participated.
That's wonderful. Hmm. Now, what you mentioned diet and exercise, and you know, we've talked about that many times on this show, and that it is important, especially for senior population, to, you know, to stay active. But let's say you have hypertension and you're on medication for it. Does the medication play a part in preventing, or if you have it, you need to get rid of it through diet and exercise, otherwise it won't, you know, matter in the Alzheimer's disease process?
Are you saying that you need to eradicate, for example, hypertension in order to improve, see improvements?
Yes,
for
that's
Alzheimer's?
What I'm asking.
Well, right now we're seeing that both are beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
don't quit taking your medicine.
Your medication by all means. You definitely need to make sure that you are able to maintain the normal blood pressures. And exercise can only help to further improve and make the medication more effective.
Okay.
But
there's a but.
Yeah, there's a but. If you do diet and exercise properly, mm-hmm. Sometimes it can reduce the level of medications that you're taking.
Absolutely.
And that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What's the minimum age for the Enlightened study?
So the Enlightened study, we're looking at individuals who are at least 55 years of age and over.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly 55 age through 80 years of age. So we have a very large age range, and some people might think, well, 55 might be, you know, too early to start thinking about Alzheimer's disease. But again, because we're taking the prevention approach, it really isn't too early to start engaging in those positive behaviors.
And so a question for either of you, the prevention approach, you know, obviously you just gave us some of the things that we can do, you know, lower our blood pressure and our cholesterol, et cetera. Are there other preventative measures that you're studying in the center or at your at Duke?
Yes, there is. In fact, our major emphasis at the center right now is prevention. All of the studies that we're doing deal with prevention. We have actually three different focuses. Of course, the diet and exercise, I really like that kind of approach.
Mm-hmm.
But we do also do brain imaging studies and, of course, drug studies that we're doing. One of the major studies that we're doing involves a drug that was formerly used for diabetes.
Mm.
A lesser dosage of that drug may have beneficial effects for Alzheimer's disease.
And on those, are you using those, for instance, with that drug, are you giving that to people before they have it, or do you give it to people that have it now?
Yeah. Drug studies or prevention studies are always dealing with people that don't have the disease.
Yeah. So, and are you trying to find people that are maybe have a genetic predisposition in their family, that kind of thing? Who's part of that study, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, we're looking for anyone who is, quote, normal, doesn't have the disease to become part of our prevention studies.
Okay.
So we're looking for normal persons.
Gotcha.
But there's a lot of criteria within that normal that's on your website that talks about candidates who are really good folks.
So if people are interested in participating in the study, they can go to the website, and we will give that out before the end of the show. But I wanted to ask about the prevention again. I really think that that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Genetics. So if your father had it, your mother has it, are you more likely to get it?
Well, it puts you at risk for having it.
Yes.
Do we have any percentages of how much more risk you're at?
I don't have those percentages off my head, but having family predisposition does increase one's risk. And I know that one of the criteria for, I believe one of the studies, the genetic studies, are that you might have a family history. Now, they do confirm that with genetic testing to see if you have positive alleles for Alzheimer's disease in particular, which is kind of a mixed bag of tricks, which is why I think, you know, Reverend Edmonds mentions the African-American study. So one of the things that they know is that the APOE4, which a lot of people have heard about, which is relatively successful in predicting or is associated with Alzheimer's diseases, as for example in Caucasian or white populations, isn't as successful in assessing risk in African-American populations. So it suggests to us that there's something different going on there, that perhaps there might be other genetic markers that might be more effective and helping to assess one's risk. So for an African-American, knowing that you are APOE4 positive doesn't necessarily mean that you're at higher risk. But for someone who isn't African-American, it does mean that you are at higher risk. So that's something that we really have big questions about and that we're looking to study more closely.
So do African-Americans get Alzheimer's at higher rates than non-African-Americans?
Yes, twice more likely.
Wow. I didn't know
twice
that.
Twice more likely than whites. And in the Hispanic population, 1.5 times more likely than whites to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
And since, as I mentioned in our study, we're looking at the cardiovascular risk factors, one hypothesis that's being heavily explored is because cardiovascular risk factors, things like hypertension and diabetes, are so prevalent in those communities. Mm-hmm. There's a belief and a thought that those are contributing factors.
There's a correlation.
And there's a very strong correlation, and that's one of the reasons why the prevalence of Alzheimer's and cardiovascular dementia are so much higher in those populations.
Interesting. So, we hear so much more about Alzheimer's today than we did last, 5 years ago or 10 years ago or certainly in the last decade or two. Reverend, you've been, doing in this game, if you will, for a long time. Do you feel like, because, back in the day we would say, mama's senile or, that kind of thing. Do you think that we just know more about it today and that's why we see so much more of it, or we're actually getting more people that have the disease today?
I think it's a bit both. We have the baby boomer generation that's coming into the age of the onset of Alzheimer's disease, and that's going to be like a tsunami. Mm-hmm. There will not be enough beds, enough nursing homes,
right,
enough geriatricians to take care of the population that's coming into the age of Alzheimer's disease. And then also, we do know more about the disease today than we knew years ago.
Yeah.
So, people are being diagnosed with Alzheimer's rather than just normal aging.
Right. And just to add to that, and it's great that Henry brought up the baby boomers generations, the primary predictor of being more likely to get diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease really is age. And we've been discussing all of the other secondary and other very important risk factors, but age is number one. And part of the reason that we're seeing such a huge increase is because we do have a large baby boom population and we have wonderful health care that for the first time in history, people are living well into the 80s, whereas we did not have that before. So being older, being 80 years of age and over is a huge part of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
Well, I wanted to ask a quick question. So on your website, there was something about a brain bank. And as you were talking earlier about autopsies, can you share a little bit about the brain banks that piqued my curiosity?
We have a lot of people that are very interested in the brain bank. What's interesting about the brain bank, we have several thousand brains in the brain bank. We study brains, okay? That's how our research is done.
Mm-hmm.
The bench science, the real nitty-gritty of the science is done through autopsy of brains and then looking at brain specimens and trying to determine what's going on in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so our brain bank sends specimens of brains with affected Alzheimer's disease all over the country, all over the world, in fact, from Duke. Hmm. However, the numbers of African Americans that participate in the brain bank is very small.
Hmm. So when you sign up for your driver's license and you sign up to be a donor, and maybe this has no correlation at all.
No correlation at all.
Goodness.
Yeah.
But, because...
Well, is that the culture of African Americans? They don't want to donate their brains to science?
Autopsy, period.
Okay.
Yeah, because we...
It's a no-no in the
African American
community.
People can't see me from the studio unless you just know me personally. In our culture, we wouldn't want an autopsy of our loved ones. It's typically we want to bury that person whole.
Yeah.
Best way to describe it, the reality
is that it, you know, let me give you an example. My mm-hmm. wife, I talked to you earlier about my wife's mm-hmm. father mm-hmm. having Alzheimer's disease. Well, when I initially talked to her about autopsy after his death, she said, no way. Mm-hmm. But eventually she came around to to understand that autopsy was really necessary mm-hmm. and that it would help succeeding generations. And so she did have the autopsy. What happened is, and this is the procedure, immediately after death, a person's head has to be put on ice. They go into the back of the skull, extract the brain, so you don't really see. I mean, because I think a lot of people feel that, you know, this person is going to be disfigured. When I look at him in the casket, he's not going to look like himself. He's going to have a half a head.
Well, it's good to know that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So you would never know mm-hmm. that there was an autopsy done. So she was very pleased with that.
Mm-hmm.
But
Education is key, isn't it?
I think a lot of times that we say in church that you know, we have this other body that comes down from heaven,
mm-hmm.
but we act like that we need to take our whole body to heaven when we die.
Yeah, we hope it's going there. That's what we're hoping, right?
Well,
when we act that way,
that's how we act.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, and I've seen pictures of the brain that had you know, Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and you know, for a visual picture, the way I think about it is, it's like the roots of a tree, of a very old tree, that have grown and wrapped themselves around the parts of the brain, and I think you call it tangles and mm-hmm. and something
plaques
and yeah, and really just kind of squeezes off parts of your brain. That's sort of my layman's version of
it's a very good one.
so that parts of your brain still work and function, and other parts are completely dead.
Off.
Yeah. So this brain research with in the brain bank, that's fascinating. And yeah, I can see that's very necessary to be able, because you can't really learn a whole lot about it while the person's alive. I mean, other than mm-hmm. behavioral aspects.
Absolutely.
Now, along with the behavioral aspects, are there any of your studies doing any research on, so the folks that already have it? We talked a lot about prevention, but what about are we getting any new drugs, any new therapies for if you have it? Any ideas?
Well, all of the drugs that we currently have that exist right today do not really have a very positive effect on curing the disease.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's nothing that we have at the present. That's why our focus now is on prevention. The drugs that we currently have, they tend to they modify the symptoms of the disease, but that's about it.
Right.
And they don't work on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, they are very effective, and some people, they may not be as effective.
Right, and they're more effective, you know, amongst the few that we have that are successful, and the population who responds to it when it's administered early, which mm-hmm. is another reason that we often talk about just getting screened early and being aware, learning how to identify, you know, symptoms. Because oftentimes when people are just becoming forgetful as they get older, mm-hmm. They tend to, or especially family members, they tend to miss that very critical period when the individual is transitioning to just normal forgetting that's associated with aging,
mm-hmm.
and when it really needs significant attention.
And so what would you tell our listeners? What is that, what to look for? You know, what are those key little factors?
So what's really important is looking at atypical behaviors. And people tend to focus only on memory, mm-hmm. but it goes beyond that. So things such as logical or clinical thinking, good judgment, decision making, those things are also affected as well. So, for example, you might have a parent or an aunt that has always been very systematic and very timely in paying their bills. They are driving themselves everywhere. and they're usually very well organized. And over time, you might notice, hey, you know, mom or dad, you know, they may have gotten lost or taking much longer to get places. They may have forgotten to pay a bill. So the behaviors in themselves usually, which is why they're missed, are not the problem. It's the frequency at which the behaviors are occurring. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a parent who's always been, or an elder who's always been scatterbrained, that's different. So what we're really looking for and what caregivers should be looking for are atypical behaviors. What is outside of the norm for that person? Because we do have a threshold between what the average, you know, 60, 70, or 80-year-old will forget, what is normal mm-hmm. forgetting. And we do have, you know, ways of determining and assessing what is now crossing the boundaries. And being able to identify early on is important, not only for prevention, but also for planning. Which is very, very important. Oftentimes people don't like to talk about it, but planning is very important because certain decisions caregivers are forced to make for their loved one when things are too late and they can no longer get their opinion about it mm-hmm. Or know what their wishes are. Right. And it puts the caregiver, in addition to the general stresses of caregiving, of having to make very important life decisions on behalf of this person without really having the opportunity for their feedback, things about finances, where they're going to live. And other things like that are really important.
Oh, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about, a gene, some sort of acronym, APOE4. APOE4. I'm going to write that down.
Write that down because I'm going to be checking my blood.
Yeah. Now, is that some kind of marker that would give you predisposition for the disease?
Generally, yes. And but not everybody who has the APOE4 gene will get Alzheimer's disease.
Correct.
So it's not necessary to go out and get gene testing.
Yes.
Okay.
That's pretty expensive. But
yes.
Yeah. But absolutely. Worth it, though. I mean, goodness.
Oh. Well, and again, remember that, as we mentioned before, it only has been successful in being associated with elevated risk among certain populations. Mm-hmm. It has not been successful in minority populations and even assessing increased risk.
Interesting.
So it isn't beneficial for everyone.
So there's so many myths that are out there. As Heather wanted to hear some of the criteria, what are some of the symptoms? When I had my physical last year, I asked my physician if I was premenopausal.
Where are we going, Pat?
I know. I'm going to bring it home. It's going to make sense in a second.
Please.
And Reverend. And so, because I shared with her that I was starting to be a little, you know, what was I just thinking, you know, forgetting that immediate thought. She shared with me that was a symptom of premenopausal. Of course, in my mind, I felt like, am I starting to...
thinking Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's. But she shared with me that short-term memory like that was kind of... Anyway, that's where I was going, that there's so many different things that are
affect your memory.
Yeah, affect your memory, and that are misdiagnosed, you know, and that you start to make assumptions that you are already on that path for early onset.
Great point. Thank you for bringing that up. So, yes. So, again, we cannot stress enough how really important it is to just take note of your body. I mean, most people know their bodies very well, of going to get screened and really keeping open dialogue with one's doctor. Because, again, especially for women as well and for men, there are a lot of normal physiological changes that will occur as you're aging that can mimic symptoms mm-hmm. of early cognitive impairment or dementia, things like thyroid disorders, you know, menopause, where there are a lot of hormones. So, you know, the human body and the human brain is a very complex machine, and it needs a delicate balance. So very simple things can give us that impression. Also, what we know is vitamin B12, something as simple as that. A B12 deficiency can give individuals symptoms about memory impairment. So when you go in to see your physician and you get screened and they're looking for these things, they will usually rule out other measures that are very simple. You know, again, it's very easy to take a sublingual vitamin B12 supplement mm-hmm. and not to just jump to the worst possible conclusion.
Pat.
And also for African Americans particularly, vitamin D deficiency has been associated with increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. African Americans generally are deficient in vitamin D. Now, So we generally, our physicians will tell us that we need to take some vitamin D tablets and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not effective unless you get it in the sun to synthesize that vitamin D.
Mm.
So it's really necessary to get checked, get your vitamin D checked to make sure that you're not deficient in that.
Yeah.
And if you are, begin to take vitamin D supplements as well as foods that are rich in vitamin D, which are even better than the supplements.
Right.
That would be cold water fish like mackerel, also salmon,
mm-hmm.
and other kinds of vitamin D.
Interesting.
So the research, there's a gene that can detect breast cancer or, you know, predisposition for breast cancer, at least I've heard that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about, we just talked about, you said it's not, you know, doesn't work in all folks, but if there was, I always think about the ethical, you know, philosophical side of this thing. So if there was this gene that you could get checked and see if you were going to be predisposed for Alzheimer's, would you do it?
Yeah, that's a very complex question.
Yeah.
And it's one even the medical community and the research community, we discuss and we struggle with all the time. I mean, at this point, I just feel that oftentimes it's a personal decision. I mean, some people really want to know, again, and in some ways it can be beneficial for planning purposes.
Right.
We may not have a cure right now, but, I mean, if you're young enough, there are preventive measures. And also, again, life planning. I mean, nothing can really take the place of that, having control over, you know, what your long-term
would you want to know, Heather?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know that I'd want to know the outcome.
I don't want to know.
I don't think I would.
The tomorrow study that we're doing at Duke right now,
uh-huh.
is looking at particularly the genetics of the disease. The person who discovered the APOE4 gene, Dr. Alan Roses, is at Duke.
Oh.
He's looking at another gene right now, which is called the Tom 40 gene. That's where you get the word for tomorrow study.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. At any rate, the hypothesis is that when the two genes are combined, that it may be predictive of at what age a person would get Alzheimer's disease.
Hmm.
So we can begin to, in terms of prevention of the disease, begin to modify our lifestyle through exercise, diet, or through drug or whatever to begin to modify our lifestyles or drugs through drugs or whatever to increase our age at onset of the disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're hearing about 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, you know, younger people are getting this horrible disease as well. They're probably the outliers still.
Yeah,
but
that's not a typical, though. That's
right.
That's called early onset Alzheimer's disease, and it's not the typical type of disease.
Right.
There's special genetics involved with that.
Well, we won't go there.
Oh, that's special genetics. Yes. Dr. Germaine, said she would share her story as it relates to your grandmother.
Ah, yes. So,
do you mind sharing with our listeners?
No, absolutely. I don't mind sharing at all. So I have been a primary caregiver for my grandmother with AD for about 8 years now. My grandmother will be celebrating her 89th birthday next month. And she has been, you know, we've been dealing with Alzheimer's for actually over a decade. So she's more or less had some of the typical onsets. And it's a funny thing, and I always tell this story. I said, I would have never imagined, but, you know, in the mid to late 70s, my grandmother's always been a little bit forgetful. But without even knowing it, she was kind of my inspiration for, you know, becoming curious about the human brain and the mind. Because I can remember being a child, and every day my grandmother would look for her keys, you know, in her wallet, in her pocketbook. And she couldn't leave the house without it. And, you know, that really piqued my interest. And, you know, little did I know that, you know, years later, that would be, you know, a very important thing, and she does have Alzheimer's, so it is a personal passion for me and an interest as well as that. She is currently no longer living with me in my home. At one point, she lived with me and my family, so I was actually a hands-on caregiver as well as a wife, a mother, and a full-time researcher. So that was definitely a juggling act, to say least, for many years. But she is now in a facility. And again, one of the reasons why I encourage individuals to think about long-term planning is because there are certain things that you could never really predict. Mm-hmm. When she was still in a very early stages, and I brought her to come live with me so that she can, again, start treatment. She was one of the few people who responded positively to one of the drugs there, and it helped to slow her progression. Again, this doesn't happen for everyone, but she really benefited from getting on some drugs very early on, and I think that's one of the reasons why she's still with us today. But and we put certain things into place, but even myself, as someone who studies Alzheimer's disease, I don't think I was fully prepared for the caregiver piece of it. Mm. Because even though you know that they're going to become forgetful and they become more dependent on you, the mechanics and the realities of it and all the details that you have to think about don't become real until you're dealing with it. Things as to, you know, when is it appropriate for them to no longer be, you know, at home? And where's a facility that can meet their needs, and you know, all the nuances of finances and whether or not you're going to get state or government subsidy and spinning down assets. I mean, these are all questions that I had to figure it out as I went along, and yeah, those were very challenging questions. And also, how do you have this dialogue with someone who is now no longer really able to make good decisions for themselves? So planning is very, very important.
Hmm. Agreed. And we see that so much in the business that we're in as well. And a lot of our folks are good planners. And I think you see a lot of this baby boomer generation, at least that's what we're seeing. They're really good planners. And so that's very good advice. We just need to reiterate that even if you don't have, you know, genetics in your family of Alzheimer's, I mean, planning and getting those advanced directives and the mm-hmm. living wills and all of that in place is a very good idea for people of all walks. So
let's reiterate our call-in number and these two tickets that we have. It wouldn't be fair if I showed up at the reading with these two tickets. So the call-in number is 919-246-9639. Again, we have two wonderful tickets that we are giving away today for our show, featuring Governor Pat McCrory and Lonnie Anderson and Deborah Morgan from WRAL. It's going to be a speaking of a play called Surviving Grace. And so call in, get your free tickets. It's September 5th, and go out and have a little fun.
Now, isn't there a movie going out there, Pat? Some sort mm-hmm. of movie about Alzheimer's right now?
Mm-hmm. Alive Inside is playing at Carolina Theater in Durham right now. It's playing, I think, until today or tomorrow. Several showings.
Film. Mm-hmm. Great film. Yep.
And we at Galloway Ridge are dedicated to helping find a cure to Alzheimer's, or helping with the prevention study and that kind of thing. But that takes money. So let's talk about some money.
Yeah, money.
And we at Galloway Ridge, we do fundraisers every year for Alzheimer's. And last mm-hmm. year, how much did we raise, Pat?
Total in Chatham County, over $45,000.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And for our 5K, we raised a little over $15,000.
So we're trying our best, but I know it takes a lot more than $40,000. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the research that's going on, and how do you get funding, and how can we help?
Well, let me thank you for raising money for Alzheimer's disease. The money that you raised went to the Alzheimer's North Carolina.
It did.
Mm-hmm. And they funded our organization.
Excellent. Look at that. community work.
So that's how the community works. Mm-hmm. And we really want to thank you for what you have done and what you continue to do through the Alzheimer's North Carolina organization to raise funds. Mm-hmm. And there's a program coming up.
5K.
Next month.
It's September
13th. September 13th. Mm-hmm. Right. And I plan to be there mm-hmm. with our research studies mm-hmm. as well as other information about Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to seeing a lot of your listeners there.
And we're reminding them about their team. They're creating a team.
That's
put
right.
on the spot.
And how do folks sign up for that while we're talking about it?
Dr. Jermaine is like, well, I got to sign up. They can go to Galloway Ridge's website, or to Sport Often is actually the best site to go to. Sport Often, and it's not the best site, but Galloway Ridge is the best site to
Thank
go
you,
to.
Pat.
And
Thank
it
you.
Will drive you to Sport Often, rightfully so. And search for Chatham County in just a little search box, and it will come up. And there, I know there are a lot of things going on that day, and we can pick and choose a lot of things to support. However, this is the cause to support. It really affects 99% of the families in the country. Alzheimer's affects. Everyone I talk to has been affected by Alzheimer's, and I talk to a lot of people every day about Alzheimer's in the campaign. So please visit and register. It's $30 to register. And all of those dollars go directly to Alzheimer's North Carolina.
Excellent. And so tell us about some other funding opportunities, or does the federal government get involved?
Our major source of funding has always been the has been the federal government. We are currently, we have a grant going to the federal government right now. It's, what's it, it's the...
The center grant.
Yeah, the center
the
grant.
National Institute of Aging.
For the National Institute of Aging, I'm trying to think of. And that's what we're looking for to funding in the future. Right now, a lot of our funding is coming from drug companies for the studies that we're doing.
And some of those are in RTP that are supporting you?
Yes.
Okay.
Another source of funding is our private foundations.
Private foundations that...
Yes, such as AARP and other organizations, they frequently fund Alzheimer's research as well.
Hmm. And so, just because I'm not from the area, who are Joseph and Kathleen Bryan, the namesakes of your center? Were they folks that suffered from the disease, or...?
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense.
They... I don't know the whole story, but... Dr. Alan Roses was center director at the time, and he went to Mr. Joseph
Bryan.
Mm-hmm. And they met together, and they got some funds together to fund initially the center, mm-hmm. and that's how the center came about.
How long has the center been in operation?
It's been over 20 years, so it's a long time.
And so if folks want to learn more about the center, how can they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, which is located at https://adrc.mc.duke.edu.
Ooh. All right, let's say that again. That's another big one.
She lost me in one of those speeds there.
You can go to https://adrc.mc.duke.edu.
There we go. And we'll also have that on our website, GallowayRidge.com, for those of you that couldn't write that down fast enough.
I want to ask about, we talk about a lot about research, which is great because that's key, research and education. Collaboration, with all the wonderful medical institutions that we have in our wonderful state of North Carolina, who are you guys collaborating with? What other institutions?
We do collaborate with UNC, also Winston-Salem over there at the hospital there,
mm-hmm.
and East Carolina. So there is a collaboration with other institutions that we have with.
And Dr. Jermaine, you said you were looking for some more people for your study, more research folks. How can people learn more about that?
Okay, well, before I answer, I'll also say that we also do a lot of outreach and education with community partners as well.
Mm-hmm.
We love the public service that you're offering here, but the Durham Senior Center and many other church-based organizations throughout the Triangle really support in helping us to get the message out there to individuals and how to get support and how to be aware of Alzheimer's disease. But for the Enlighten study, we are currently still recruiting, and individuals can call in for more information about the Enlighten study at 919-681-4747, 919 681-4747 for more information about the Enlighten study.
Okay, very good.
So let me ask a question. So is Alzheimer's, as we talk about money, is Alzheimer's and the funding and the research, does this ever become political? Because I know that there are people that are lobbying. Oh, they're shaking their heads in here.
Yes.
The people are lobbying and they're, you know, they're Congress and
absolutely
to get these federal dollars. How does...
Well, Alzheimer's is basically underfunded. When you talk about the numbers of people that have the disease and just the great population that will soon have it if they don't have it at present. So when you look at the funding that goes into Alzheimer's disease, it's less than that money that goes into cancer and most of the other diseases that are funded. So we definitely need more funding. And so it is political to make sure that that Alzheimer's disease is still on the agenda mm-hmm. with other diseases when it comes to funding. So, it's definitely political.
We need to keep it in the forefront of our legislators' minds and keep those, you know, raise those funds for this disease because, you know, it does affect so many people. And even if you don't get the disease, this disease affects families and caregivers and the population at large. And it really is. I mean, all the other diseases are terrible as well. I don't mean to say this one is any worse or... But the need is very great. And like you said, with this tsunami of the baby boomers coming, we need to try to get out ahead of it as best we can. And so we will all do our part. And I know that any of y'all that are out there that want to give money, come on down to Galloway Ridge and in September, and we'll take your money. And we'll give it to the North Carolina Alzheimer's Association.
We actually have a caller. And the caller wants to ask their question. Caller, are you there? Let's see if we can try this again. Hold on one quick second. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. I hope you can hear me.
We can hear you fine. Thanks. What's your name?
All right. This is Joe. We've heard the connection between aluminum cookware and trace elements of aluminum getting into the system possibly being a cause for Alzheimer's. Are you on to any cure at this point that you could speak of?
The research is still very preliminary on that. A variety of environmental factors, including aluminum, are currently under investigation to see, you know, what is the link with Alzheimer's disease. But it's still too early to really address specifically, you know, some cures that we can address in relationship to that. Because, again, environmental factors also don't operate in isolation. So aluminum might be one link that we're seeing, but there are going to be other factors that are interacting with that that are really impacting the risk.
Is there a connection between caffeine and coffee and preventing Alzheimer's?
Oh, Lord. I hope not. I'm in big trouble.
I wish it prevent Alzheimer's because I get my share of coffee. But, Henry, that isn't something that...
There's no conclusive evidence that caffeine is really going to prevent Alzheimer's disease, but you know, if it does, you know, I'd be pretty good.
Yeah, we'd all be Alzheimer's free.
All right. Well, you know, the public out here, we're just trying to find the simplest, inexpensive cure rather than going through big pharma. So that's why I'm asking. I hear that it does, but you know,
and sir, hearsay. Are you local here in the area?
Certainly, yes.
Okay. Well, you're the winner of our tickets for this wonderful play that's coming up. Who knew? And if you could stay online, I definitely want to get your information so I can get these tickets to you.
Here's what I want you to, and I would love to go. I want you to give that to another associate because I am somewhat associated with WCOMLP, so I don't think ethically I should take the tickets.
Okay, I understand. Do you have a loved one that's affected by the disease, if you don't mind me asking?
No, thank goodness I don't. But you know, I'm very aware of what it does, and it's very it's very sad to see a family and people go through this to have someone there but not there. If you know what I mean.
I do, and so we're going to ask you this challenge question: are you registered for the 5K on September 13th?
The woman's shameless.
Hey, I am shameless when it comes to the Alzheimer's
campaign.
I quit
running a few years ago due to knee problems, but I support the runs, and I play music when they run by my house over here on Carroll Street in Carrboro. So.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate your
question.
Look,
and God bless you all, and I think the public just wants any positive information so we can just try it on our own and give you feedback, you know?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you very much for our callers and all our listeners out there. We have been discussing Alzheimer's and the research that's going on and the research and the preventative to actually help us prevent the disease altogether, which would be amazing. If we can eradicate this horrible disease in our lifetimes, it will be a happy day. Thank you. This is Heather Rusnak with Galloway Ridge and Pat Richardson.
Yep.
And our guests, we appreciate y'all coming, and we will see you next time.
See y'all on September 13th at the 5K.
All right. Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much for having us.
Mm-hmm. And everything started in to hum. Still, it's a real good bet the best is yet to come. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? Best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain the cup dry. Wait till your charms are ripe for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but baby, you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. Wait till I draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine, and you're gonna be mine.